I'm backstage with our soloist, Leonidas Cavacos. Leonidas, congratulations. What an expressive and brilliant performance.
Thank you very much.
It's wonderful to meet you. And I'd like to begin by asking you about the dedication to this concerto. Berg dedicated it to the memory of an angel. Who is the angel, and what does she mean to you as you perform this piece?
Well, the angel was a little girl that was daughter of Alma Mahler, and she started her life with all the hopes, as everybody does as a baby, and unfortunately she died extremely young. And in a way, you know, this is a piece that concerns practically all of us. I mean, in the sense that there is no life that starts without hopes, without joy, without humor, without purity, and so on. And there is no life that happens and evolves without problems, without questions, without agonies, without all the different emotional situations that we experience through life. And of course, there is no life without the question, as we grow and we approach death, the question of what is that and what actually happens afterwards. So this is in a way a piece for all humankind, even though it's dedicated to the memory of an angel, as Berg wrote. But actually, this life that the concerto refers to is a very short one. It doesn't mean that it is somehow avoiding what is actually there for all of us in our fate. Mm. And he was not only obsessed and upset with what happened to the girl, but he was fighting his own illness and his own not well-being, and he was feeling that he's approaching death. So in a way, it's also autobiographical.
It's very interesting that you say this piece is for all of us, for all humankind. Do you feel that there are angels within each one of us?
Sure. I think the human nature, one cannot prove this kind of thing, but I imagine that human nature includes all of it. It includes the angel side and the devil side.
And it almost seems like Berg is able to mix these two elements, not only in a metaphorical way, as we've been speaking about, but also in a musical way, because although it's written with 12-tone serial technique, he also very effectively uses tonality and the open strings of the violin. How does he do this so effectively?
That's what I love in this piece, in the sense that it's not, he doesn't compose by the book. So the rules of the 12-tone are quite strict, in fact, and quite specific. And he somehow is very aware of it. He writes very much in this way, but not exclusively in this way, because it shows that the way is not the purpose. You know, so that means that, let's say that I don't do what I can do, but I do what is needed. Uh-huh. You know, so I think that this is what is fantastic when you look at the score. And I think that's why it is one of the pieces, I think, that has been, or the 12th tone that has been most played, because it has a certain kind of, not only it has a very strong program, but in a way the concept is there, but it's not dictating the idea, the emotions, and he's not afraid to touch other worlds and bring them in and mix everything and really create, let's say, a universal expression in terms of compositional techniques.
You are also a conductor, and if you had to choose one or the other, violin playing or conducting, which one would you choose?
That's not possible to answer, because music is like the sun for me, so it doesn't matter whether it's conducting or playing. When I do the one, I miss the other, so I can't really tell you what I would choose to do. But why I chose to start conducting is because I felt that there is much more possibilities to explore in repertoire, even though with conducting you can never get as personal as with playing. There's no way. But you can get personal enough, and the spectrum of the repertoire is enormous. But the orchestral repertoire is a much bigger, so to say, a much longer journey for me.
Speaking of journeying, you concertize all over the world, yet you still make your home in Greece, where you grew up, in Athens, I believe. Mm-hmm. You've spoken before of the Hellenistic and humanist approach to life and your own education. How does this influence the way you play today?
Oh, well, very much. Very much. I think the greatest thing one can learn from all the great minds of ancient Greece is the focus on humankind. And it's all there and it's all provided and analyzed for the later generations to look at them and study them. It's amazing information, and through that information also there is an amazing, let's say one can learn an amazing approach to life in practically all stages, you know, in the sense of, you know, how you learn, what you learn, why you learn, how you achieve, what you achieve, how do you share, how do you try to understand other people, how do you actually learn only through searching. You know, even today, for instance, we have endless possibilities, I would say, in terms of access to information. You just sit at home and you push a button, and you're on the internet, and then you find whatever you want, more or less. I mean, if you imagine 40, 50 years ago, you had to go to the libraries and search for the books, the pages, find them, you know, so you have to go much more through this. I consider it a huge gift that I can really approach any kind of information. And in combination with certain books that I read all the time, you know, and that I study, this makes me discover and go on.
Do you mind sharing a few of those titles? Some of the books that you find most fascinating?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm talking about the classical, so dialogues of Plato, like Timaeus, is for me something that is like a sacred book, not so much because he refers to the Atlantis, but more because of the analysis of the creation of the world. I find this totally fascinating. Also, there is an amazing chapter in Timaeus where he's actually describing, when he talks about the triangles, describing something that today science is describing as the laser rays. But I'm talking about word by word. It's exactly the same thing. It's fascinating to see that already so many years ago. Of course, I cannot imagine living without Odyssey, without Iliad. These are Homer's is something that I don't think has been surpassed, and it will never be, because it's just the Odyssey. I think is something that is touching practically everybody, and the search for Ithaca is a search that we all, willingly or unwillingly, consciously or unconsciously, are going through. You know, I'm also reading a book lately that's quite interesting, because it's not actually written by Greek, it's written by a Hungarian, but it's referring to the very beginnings of ancient Greek mathematics. And it's very interesting that music comes from mathematics. Mm. Because this mathematics is something that we have really misunderstood, and the way we are taught at school is something, you know, like we would use just for going to the groceries and whatever, you know, and we need. But mathematics is something totally philosophical, and it's something that touches very much the structure of the universe. So the structure, for instance, Alban Berg, you know, if you go back to the concerto, each section of the piece has specific bar numbers, and he was trying to create relations between the different sections. And when we look at a great painting, and it makes such a huge impact, this is not just because the colors are nice, but, you know, there is a certain structure there, which means that the painter decides where to put what. And it's like composing a concerto or a symphony. Where do you put what? And yes. So in what kind of analogy and proportion does it exist? Mm-hmm. And that analogy and that proportion is really what is projecting. That is what's projecting, not only the colors or the theme or the topic of something, but it's where is everything positioned. And that where, when you have like a limited space, like is a frame of a painting, you know, it's very important, the positioning. The positioning has to do with division of that area. How you divide it vertically, how you divide it horizontally, how you divide it diagonally. So where is what? And from that comes the impact of, you know, when we go to the museum and we look at the painting and we are fascinated by it, you know, it's not just the skill of design, but it's, there's something else.
the rigor of the ratios and the proportions, like you mentioned. Well, it almost sounds as if you have a book inside of you, Leonidas.
No, really? I don't think so, but...
Well, it was wonderful to speak with you and spend so much time. Thank you for taking the time.
Yes, thank you very much.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.